Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, December 10th, 2021. Section A. Oil execs expect more deals in the region. By Topal Takashashi. Oil execs expect mergers and acquisitions in the Permian Basin to continue as increasingly volatile energy prices and growing uncertainty over the future of fossil fuels drive the industry to consolidate. How fast companies will consolidate holdings in the prolific West Texas oil basin remains up for debate, but executives and analysts agree that the trend will continue. Energy companies have been consolidating since crude prices tumbled from more than $100 a barrel in 2014. Tim Leach, the executive vice president of the lower 48 states of ConocoPhillips, and Scott Sheffield, the CEO of Pioneer Natural Resources, have overseen some of the biggest acquisitions in the prolific West Texas oil basin during the pandemic-driven downturn. Leach and Sheffield, speaking at a luncheon at the World Petroleum Congress in Houston on Tuesday, said they don't expect mergers and acquisitions will ease up, even as oil demand and prices recover from the global pandemic. Consolidation of our industry is a force that is not going to slow down, said Leach. I think our industry needs to be consolidated. There are benefits to having size and scale. The pace of mergers accelerated after the pandemic strangled demand, sent crude prices to historic lows, and squeezed company profits. Mergers and acquisitions activity in the oil and gas industry hit a two-year high this year, with at least seven deals worth more than $1 billion each, according to the Austin Energy Research firm Enverus. Oil companies are making deals to get bigger and gain economies of scale that would allow them to produce oil profitably at low prices. In addition, larger companies can more easily access Wall Street capital. Mergers, however, often lead to layoffs as companies eliminate redundant positions. ConocoPhillips and Pioneer Natural Resources have been two of the most active companies acquiring Permian assets during the pandemic-driven downturn. ConocoPhillips, the Houston-based independent, gobbled up Concho Resources in a $9.7 billion deal earlier this year and is in the process of acquiring Royal Dutch Shell's Permian assets for $9.5 billion. Pioneer Natural Resources, the Irving independent, took over Parsley Energy for $7.6 billion in January in an all-stock deal. Less than 5 months later, Pioneer completed its acquisition of Double Point Energy for $6.4 billion in a cash and stock deal. Having no debt gives you options, Sheffield with Pioneer said. That's why we took advantage of the marketplace in the last 18 months to make two large acquisitions. I think you'll have another cycle of consolidation over the next 3 to 5 years. Others, however, are less bullish. Enverus said it expects a consolidation to slow next year because many combination opportunities have been exhausted. The field of potential acquisition candidates is narrowing as rising oil prices lift company values and make it harder to find bargains. In addition, many oil companies still have too much debt after years of chasing growth, making them less attractive acquisition targets. Travis Stice, CEO of Midland Independent Diamondback Energy, which hasn't made an acquisition recently, said it has become difficult to find deals that offer Permian assets ready for development. When you look at the Permian Basin, it's hard to find acquisitions of size and scale. The industry does need to consolidate, but it's still difficult for me to see the machinations behind the scenes for this. Sheffield predicts tighter market. Pioneer CEO Scott Sheffield told CNBC this week that he sees oil prices headed north of $100 in 2022. Sheffield, in an interview with Brian Sullivan, said he was surprised by President Biden's release of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve into the market saying it was a band-aid approach and similar attempts won't have much of an impact because demand will create a tight market by the end of 2022 and into 2023. Oil is moving back to Brent 75 Tuesday morning and will probably be back up to $80 or $85 here in the next few weeks as demand comes back. Sheffield also said he is concerned with the possibility of oil pricing following what is happening with liquid natural gas prices in Europe and Japan. That's equivalent to $200 oil, Sheffield said, and so right now oil is cheap. Sheffield said during the interview that most people estimate a $4 million barrel a day increase in demand and that by the end of 2022 we'll be back to 100 or 101 million barrels a day. He also quoted Amin Nasser, chief executive officer of Saudi Aramco, about OPEC and OPEC Plus being out of supply and extra capacity in 2022. Things are going to get very tight in 2022, going into 23, Sheffield said. Other notables from the interview included he expected Pioneer to operate with essential zero debt by the end of 2022, a first in Pioneer's history. He's hoping for U.S. shale, OPEC, and OPEC Plus to work to help create the stability needed in the oil market. He talked about experiencing three downturns in the last 11 years compared to three in his first 30 years in the oil business. Sheffield previously told Bloomberg that investors have different expectations of companies than in the past. Bloomberg reported in November that publicly traded companies, meanwhile, are unwilling to budge from austerity programs popular with investors. There's no upside in gifting the Biden administration with inflation-easing supplies. To that point, Sheffield told Bloomberg, I don't think they realize what's changed in the U.S. is our investors want cash back. Investors do not want us to grow anymore. If Biden wants us to change, he's got to change that investor mindset. Pioneer earlier this year overtook Occidental to become the largest Permian Basin producer, according to previous Reporter Telegram articles. Former Rockhounds exec goes on his own. By Stuart Doreen. For more than two decades, baseball in Midland has been Jamie Richardson's business, and during that time he's hit more than his fair share of home runs for the hometown team. That ends in January for Richardson, the Rockhounds' assistant general manager for marketing and tickets. At age 47, he's saying goodbye to a position with a Midland professional sports institution and for a new challenge, becoming his own entity. Richardson said he is moving forward into a contract sales business. Instead of being in charge of corporate sales, overseeing a sales staff, and setting agendas for Midland's AA baseball team, he'll be putting the onus on himself. Richardson described himself as being people-pleasing oriented, a reason he said he and the Rockhounds were such a good fit. Still, going out on his own allows him to continue to serve clients and a customer base. The Rockhounds are an organization that prides itself on customer service. They know you want to do business with people you like and trust. Richardson grew up in Brunswick, Missouri, a 1,000 population town where he said he learned to be trusting by nature. Growing up, he learned about building relationships. He said it didn't take long after he arrived in Midland in 1997, working with the then Midland Angels as a customer service manager, that Midland isn't like every place. He talked about Midland's small-town characteristics despite its population growth, especially during the last decade. Midland is a place where you can have gentlemen's agreement. It's your word, he said. Having documentation is important for obvious reasons, but in Midland, it's unnecessary at times if the trust is there. He said working with the Rockhounds, he learned to show customers that he and the organization will go out of its way to make a customer feel special. It doesn't matter if it was for a company of 50 or 1,000. You have to treat everyone the same, he said. He expects being a hard worker will pay off as he moves into a more of a freelancer role. He said contract sales means he starts with nothing and must earn his pay. One of his first opportunities to be working, but not employed, is handling contract sales for the Midland County Fair. I'm kind of taking a leap of faith, Richardson said. Here I am as a 25-year resident to help your event, organization, or business in some way. I will commit to you before you do to me, because if I don't perform, I don't get paid. Richardson is betting on himself, which might be more understandable considering what the Rockhounds think of him. During a going-away ceremony, the club announced Richardson would be part of the Rockhounds Hall of Fame, an honor for those who have had an impact with the team on the field and current and former Midlanders in the community. Richardson isn't the first Midlander to change profession during recent times, but he is walking away from a position when it would have been easy to be comfortable. Still, changes will have its perks, like coaching his daughter's basketball team, different family opportunities with wife Rosanna, and taking on new projects that the Midland community can offer a person, especially one whose life opens up a little more during the summer. Talking with Richardson, it's easy to see baseball will always be in his blood, but at the same time, now is the right time for this diehard Baltimore Orioles fan to leave the nest. National Weather Service. Rain unlikely despite new forecast. The National Weather Service said there is rain in the very extended forecast, but as one official told the Reporter Telegram, I wouldn't bet on it. A couple of models, according to the NWS, are showing the possibility of rain a week from Saturday, around December 18th, but things can change when looking at long-range forecasts. Still, it is called the best chance for precipitation that the NWS is showing in the next 10 days. There is no rain in the 7-day forecast, just above average temperatures and windy conditions. The NWS is showing high temperatures in the 70s for most of this week. The normal around this time of year is around 59 to 61, and gusts reaching 25 to 40 miles per hour through Friday night. The NWS reports there has been no rain in this month and 1 inch of precipitation measured at Midland International Airport since the beginning of August. The normal rainfall from August 1st through December 8th is 5.5 inches. The NWS also reports an average temperature of 55 degrees in September. That is 7.4 degrees above the average for December. The higher winds, lower relative humidity, and higher than average temperatures have led to a fire weather watch, according to the NWS. Officials called the combination, along with the dry conditions, a recipe for disaster. The National Weather Service has reported that 13.5 inches of rain had fallen this year. That is above the normal for the entire year of 13.5 inches.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with more articles from the inside pages of the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Friday, December 10th, 2021. Drop in local gas prices trails rest of region, by Stuart Doreen. The 3-cent drop in the average price of gasoline in Midland this week didn't compare well across the state. The decline was below the state average, 4 cents, and was tied for the smallest drop among the 27 largest metropolitan areas, according to AAA Texas. It was also the lowest in the region. In El Paso and Amarillo, the week-over-week decline was 7 cents. In San Angelo and Lubbock, the drop was 5 cents. In Odessa, the average fell by 4 cents. AAA Texas reported El Paso still has the highest average for a gallon of regular unleaded in the state, $3.11. The average in Midland is $3.06. Other metropolitan areas with gasoline at or above $3 a gallon were Odessa, $3.04, College Station Bryan, $3.03, and Texarkana, $3.02. The state average this week was $3.03. Amarillo again posted the lowest average across the region and state, $2.74. Other averages across the region included $2.83 in Lubbock, $2.87 in San Angelo, and $2.89 in Abilene. Prices at the pump have been falling as crude oil prices have been fluctuating due to concerns over the COVID-19 Omicron variant, said AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in the weekly report. On December 2nd, OPEC Plus announced it would stick to its plan, for now, to raise production by 400,000 barrels per day in January, which has also helped keep a lid on oil prices. Drivers in Midland are paying 7 cents less for gasoline over the last 3 weeks. The state average has dropped 10 cents during the same period. The prices in Midland and across the state have increased year over year, according to AAA Texas. That means the 13 cent spread in the average in Midland compared to the state average is the same as 1 year ago. Some Dems join push against ban on crude exports, by Ari Natter, Bloomberg. The Biden administration shouldn't ban the export of crude oil, a bipartisan group of House lawmakers said in a letter to Biden. Reinstating the ban on the export of domestic crude oil, which was lifted in 2015, was among the options the White House was considering as it sought ways to address gasoline prices that had been hovering around a 7-year high and have set off political alarm bells at the White House. But the letter, spearheaded by Representative Henry Cuellar, a Texas Democrat, said the move would have the opposite effect, echoing what many analysts have also said. Any suggestion that reinstating the crude export ban would lower gasoline prices is misguided due to the likely spike in international crude prices, which many U.S. refineries process, said the letter, which was also signed by Democratic Representatives Vicente Gonzalez and Philemon Vela, both of Texas, and Democrat Sanford Bishop of Georgia. It was also signed by Texas Republican Representatives August Pfluger, Roger Williams, Tony Gonzalez, and Representative Carol Miller, a Republican from West Virginia. President Joe Biden announced last month that he planned to release 50 million barrels of crude from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve in concert with China, Japan, India, South Korea, and the UK in an unprecedented coordinated attempt by the world's largest oil consumers to tame rising costs. Since then, the price of oil has dropped because of concern about the new Omicron variant of COVID-19, and the White House is not actively considering a crude oil export ban at this time, according to a person familiar with the administration's deliberations. Other negative effects of a ban on crude oil exports include straining international relationships, discouraging domestic production, and creating an imbalance between refining capacity and domestic production, the lawmakers wrote. CEOs say investment into fossil fuels key to avoiding economic calamity, by Kevin Crowley and Lucia Kasai, Bloomberg. Buoyed by high oil prices, the bosses of the biggest explorers this week laid out a vision for the energy transition that hinges on more fossil fuel investment rather than less. The World Petroleum Congress in Houston, an industry showcase, saw last-minute cancellations due to the Omicron variant, but it didn't stop a steady stream of senior executives hammering on the same point. The world will need us for years to come, so let's invest and produce, or risk more economically damaging price spikes and even social unrest. A halt in investment in oil and gas is misguided, OPEC Secretary General Mohamed Barkindo said in a recorded presentation to the gathering on Wednesday. Almost $12 trillion in spending is needed between now and 2045 to ensure adequate crude and gas supplies, without which the world will see long-term scars on energy security, affecting not only producers, but also consumers. Volatile commodity prices and growing inflation anxiety are recasting the narrative around climate change just weeks after world leaders hashed out a lackluster deal at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow. Natural gas shortages in Europe and Asia, surging fuel prices in the U.S., and concerns over power grid reliability are forcing governments to confront difficult choices around transitioning to low-carbon energy sources. The contradiction is all too apparent in the U.S., where President Joe Biden asked OPEC and its allies to increase crude production just months after enacting a wave of anti-oil policies at home, including canceling the Keystone XL pipeline and floating a fracking ban. U.S. LNG export capacity set to become the world's largest, by Marcy DeLuna, Houston Chronicle. U.S. liquefied natural gas export capacity will be the world's largest by the end of 2022, according to the Energy Department. The U.S. in 2020 became the world's third largest LNG exporter behind Australia and Qatar. It will have the world's largest LNG export capacity by the end of 2022, when new LNG liquefaction units at Houston Liquefied Natural Gas Company Cheniere Energy's Sabine Pass and the Virginia company Venture Global's Calcasieu Pass LNG export terminal, both located in Louisiana, come online. Train 6 at Sabine Pass, which began producing LNG in late November, adds up to 0.76 billion cubic feet per day of peak export capacity to the facility. Peak LNG production capacity is the amount of LNG produced under optimal operating conditions. The first export cargo from Train 6 is expected to be shipped before the end of the year. At Calcasieu Pass LNG, the first LNG production is expected to be before the end of this year. The new export facility will have a combined capacity of up to 1.6 billion cubic feet per day. Moreover, the U.S. Federal Energy Regulatory Commission in October 2021 approved requests to increase LNG production at the Sabine Pass and Corpus Christi LNG terminals by a combined 0.7 billion cubic feet per day. As of November 2021, the Energy Department estimates that U.S. LNG liquefaction capacity was at 9.5 billion cubic feet per day, and peak capacity was 11.6 billion cubic feet per day. By the end of 2022, U.S. capacity is expected to increase to 11.4 billion cubic feet per day, and peak capacity will increase to 13.9 billion cubic feet per day, exceeding Australia, which has an estimated peak LNG production capacity of 11.4 billion cubic feet per day, and Qatar, which has a peak capacity of 10.4 billion cubic feet per day, according to the Energy Department. U.S. LNG peak export capacity will further increase to an estimated 16.3 billion cubic feet per day in 2024 when construction on Golden Pass LNG near Port Arthur, the eighth U.S. LNG export facility, begins operations. Americans focus on inflation over pay gains, by Christopher Rugeber and Hannah Fingerhut, Associated Press Writers, Washington. Americans' overall income has accelerated since the pandemic, but so has inflation. And a new poll finds that far more people are noticing the higher prices than the pay gains. Two-thirds say their household costs have risen since the pandemic, compared with only about a quarter who say their incomes have increased, according to a poll by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Half say their incomes have stayed the same. Roughly a quarter report that their incomes have dropped. The fast-rising prices that have been surging through the economy have forced many Americans to change their spending habits. About one-third say, for example, that they're driving less often. And roughly 3 in 10 Americans say they're buying less meat than they usually do. In the past year, gas prices have jumped nearly 50%, and the cost of meat is up 15%. Most people say the sharply higher prices for goods and services in recent months have had at least a minor effect on their financial lives, including about 4 in 10 who say the hit has been substantial. The poll confirms that the burden has been especially hard on low-income households. On Friday, when the government will issue its latest reading on consumer prices, it's expected to report that inflation soared 6.7% in November compared with a year earlier, according to economists surveyed by data provider FactSet. That would top October's 6.2% year-over-year increase and would mark the highest consumer inflation rate in nearly four decades. The findings in the APN-ORC poll underscore the financial pressures that this year's spike in inflation has imposed on many Americans' finances. Still, as they have since before the pandemic struck in March 2020, a majority say their own finances remain good. Yet many Americans have soured on the economy in the past year, even though most economic indicators point to a still steady recovery, with near-record job openings, solid retail spending, and a rebound in manufacturing. Only about one-third say the economy is good, down from about half who said so in March. That may illustrate why President Joe Biden hasn't benefited politically from positive readings on the economy. The poll, though, finds a sharp partisan split. Only about 1 in 10 Republicans describe the economy as good. More than half of Democrats say so. Yet when asked about their own financial situations, people are more positive and less divided along party lines. About two-thirds of Americans say their personal finances are in good shape. Roughly 7 in 10 Democrats and about 6 in 10 Republicans say so. Analysts generally expect the economy to grow at a brisk 7% annual rate in the final 3 months of this year, boosting growth for all of 2021 to its fastest calendar year pace since 1984. The unemployment rate has dwindled to 4.2% from 6.7% a year ago. And with many employers struggling to hire, the economy still has nearly 4 million fewer jobs than it did before the pandemic. U.S. households, on average, are earning higher incomes than they did before the pandemic. Wages and salaries grew 4.2% in September compared with a year earlier, the largest annual increase in two decades of records. And the government provided a $1,400 stimulus check to all households in March, as well as a $300 a week unemployment aid supplement from March to September. Most households with children began receiving the $300 monthly child tax credit in July. Those government measures, combined with higher paychecks, lifted Americans' overall household incomes by 5.9% in October compared with a year earlier. Yet inflation jumped to 6.2% that month, the highest reading in three decades, negating the income gain. Jason Furman, President Barack Obama's former top economic advisor, suggested that many people don't think about government payments, such as stimulus checks, when considering their own incomes, because those payments are generally one-time windfalls. A likely factor in Americans' worries about inflation is that rising prices have been concentrated in highly visible categories. The poll finds that 85% say they paid higher than usual prices for food and gas in recent months. Nearly 6 in 10 say the same about electricity. About 4 in 10 say they bought appliances recently and that the prices were higher than normal. The effect is even more pronounced among middle and lower income Americans. Half of people in households earning less than $50,000 a year say the price increases have had a major impact on their finances. Only a third of those in households earning more than $50,000 say the same.
Angela Mendoza of Midland passed away December 2nd. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Bernice Bauer passed away December 8th, just 4 days shy of her 100th birthday. The family will receive friends on Friday, December 10th from 5 to 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held Saturday at December 11th at 1 p.m. at Westside Church of Christ. Burial will be held on Tuesday, December 14th at 1:30 p.m. at Fort Bliss National Cemetery in El Paso. Charlena Mathis of Midland passed away on Friday, December 3rd. Private graveside services will be held at Rest Haven Cemetery. Dr. Patrick LeYoung of Midland passed away on Tuesday, December 6th. Funeral Mass will be on Friday, December 10th at 10 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, with interment to follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Nicholas Rodriguez passed away on December 3rd in Midland. A graveside service will be held by American Heritage Cemetery on Friday, December 10th at 11 a.m. Arrangements are under the direction of American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Shiloh Tommy Richardson passed away on November 16th at Baylor All Saints Hospital in Fort Worth. Funeral services have been entrusted to North Dallas Funeral Home. A celebration of life service will be held on Saturday, December 11th at Area Cremation and Funeral Services in Irving. Visitation will be from 10 to 12 p.m. Funeral services from 12 p.m. to 1, and a reception will follow at 246 Ovaletta Drive, Justin, Texas. Thelma Ruth Gilley passed away on Sunday, November 28th. Visitation will be Monday, December 13th from 11 to 1 at Ellis Funeral Home. A funeral service will occur Monday, December 13th at 1 p.m., and burial will be at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Doris Jean Cephas passed away December 2nd. Wake service will be held on Friday, December 10th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home in Midland from 6 to 8 p.m. Funeral service will be Saturday, December 11th at 11. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Mary Irene Rodriguez of Midland passed away Monday, December 6th. Viewing will be Saturday, December 11th from 5 to 9 p.m. and Sunday, December 12th from 1 to 9 p.m. with a celebration of life to begin at 6 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Monday, December 13th at 10 a.m. at Temple Baptist Church in Midland. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Nicholas Rodriguez, Jr. of Midland passed away on December 3rd. Graveside services will be held today, December 10th, at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Funeral Home Cemetery Crematory.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, December 10th, 2021. Medical experts testify in Palvan murder trial. Two mental health experts testified Thursday with varying information about separate interviews that were conducted with Fabian Palvan, who is accused of gunning down his wife and her friend at an Odessa car wash in 2019. The trial will resume Friday morning at 9 a.m. in District Judge Justin Lowe's 161st Court. Closing arguments will start Friday's court session, as the prosecution and defense will each be given 40 minutes to speak, with the prosecution given the chance for rebuttal. Palvan is accused of shooting two people to death back in November 2019, including 36-year-old Joseph Granado and his wife Tiffany Nicole Palvan. To start Thursday's morning session, the defense called Dr. James Shute, while the prosecution called Dr. Roddy Strobel later in the morning, with her cross-examination happening after the lunch break. Shute testified that he interviewed Fabian Palvan on four occasions for a total of 10 hours. The interviews happened May 22nd, June 19th, July 3rd, and July 17th. Strobel interviewed Palvan twice. The first was on August 9th, and the second was about a week later on August 17th. During Shute's testimony, he concluded after the interviews with Palvan, the defendant had a severe mental condition with psychotic features. Strobel testified after her second interview with Palvan that he was malingering. Shute explained to the jury that Palvan had a normal childhood until about the age of 4 or 5 when his parents divorced. Shute testified Palvan's mother remarried and stated Palvan's stepfather was verbally and physically abusive to him and his mother. Shute testified that Palvan continues to hear the voice of his stepfather and hallucinates seeing his stepfather, even though his stepfather has been incarcerated for several years for murder. in detailing the events that happened at Apex Car Wash on November 26, 2019, Shute testified that Paul Vaughn arrived at the car wash to see his stepfather, which was a hallucination, approach him, and Paul Vaughn believed that his stepfather was having an affair with his wife. When Strobel took the stand to testify, she stated that Paul Vaughn told her Granado looks like his stepfather. Paul Vaughn stated to Strobel that he didn't remember shooting Granado or his wife. An earlier Odessa American article reported that a probable cause affidavit detailed that a witness saw a white Ford F-350 pickup collide with a black Cadillac Escalade on November 26, 2019, that was parked on the north side of the Apex Car Wash parking lot, located at 2357 East 8th Street. After the pickup collided with the Escalade, the witness said the suspect, who was later identified as Paul Vaughn, exited the pickup and walked to the Escalade and used a handgun to shoot Granado multiple times as he was exiting the passenger side of the Escalade. Video surveillance showed after he shot Granado that he walked to the driver's side and shot his wife through the door, which struck her several times. The affidavit stated that Paul Vaughn pulled his wife from the car and onto the ground and then left the scene. It was reported by the Odessa American that on November 27, 2019, Paul Vaughn's father, identified as Valente Paul Vaughn Rodriguez, contacted OPD and stated that his son had contacted him and wanted to turn himself in, the affidavit stated. Rodriguez also stated that he had confessed to him that he shot his wife and Granado. Another difference between testimonies from Shute and Strobel came when Paul Vaughn disposed of the firearm used in the fatal shooting. Shute testified that Paul Vaughn got rid of the firearm because he didn't want to harm himself, while Strobel testified that Paul Vaughn told her the gun was thrown out, but no reason why. During cross-examination of Strobel, the defense questioned why she emailed the preliminary report to the prosecution asking for review and corrections. Strobel explained that she was asking about the form, not the evaluation. The defense was quick to point out there were 98 corrections between Strobel's preliminary report and final report. Strobel testified all changes were changed by her own free will, not at the request of prosecution. After the jury was sent to the jury room, Lowe said if the defense is hinting at collusion, then they better be able to back it up. Lowe said he doesn't want to, quote, muddy the waters, end quote. The defense didn't ask her about it again, as the prosecution detailed during its rebuttal that the preliminary report that Strobel emailed to the prosecution was shared by the prosecution with the defense. The final person to take the stand on Thursday was Ector County Sheriff's Office Lieutenant James McKinney. He serves as custodian of records for the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. McKinney testified that Paul Vaughn has been a model prisoner since he has been in prison as of November 29, 2019. Superintendent talks STEM partnership. A potential partnership between Ector County ISD and the University of Texas Permian Basin STEM Academy, congratulations to the winner of a Quest Bridge scholarship and school choice, were among the topics during Superintendent Scott Murray's media call Wednesday. At the ECISD Board of Trustees meeting December 7th, Murray said the UTPB STEM Academy leadership team, members of their board, and educators from the school share their story with our Board of Trustees. The idea of a partnership first came up in June. A STEM task force consisting of STEM parents, teachers, and university leaders was charged with identifying viable options that address the goals of maintaining the STEM academic model, maintaining access for teachers, staff, and students, and providing a pathway for permanent facilities to meet the long-term needs of the school, a June 30th Odessa American article stated. The task force had been working for 2 years to find options for STEM. Quote, we are working on a potential partnership between ECISD and UTPB STEM that will provide some benefits to both organizations, end quote, Murray said. The district would be able to provide transportation for UTPB STEM students and athletic and fine arts opportunities currently available to students there. The STEM Academy could become another school choice option for Ector County students. Quote, UTPB STEM does a great job with their students. They present an exciting program and would give even more students an opportunity to have those experiences. So it was a great night at the board meeting, and we certainly look forward to a potential partnership between ECISD and UTPB STEM Academy, end quote, Murray said. Asked if the STEM Academy would be included in the proposed bond issue, Murray said the district doesn't yet have a formal relationship with the STEM Academy. Quote, so we will, through the contract negotiation process, begin to talk about facilities and what those potentially may look like in the future. But right now, we don't have a formal partnership with them in place, end quote, Murray said. On the scholarship note, Murray extended congratulations to Odessa High School senior Rigoberto Mendoza, who earned a QuestBridge National Scholarship. Murray noted that it is an, quote, overwhelming opportunity, end quote, for Mendoza because of his, quote, outstanding academic achievement at Odessa High School, end quote. As a result, he has been matched with Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Quote, QuestBridge is a program that matches high-achieving, low-income high school students with, really, the college of their dreams, and Rigoberto has been matched with Emory University in the city of Atlanta and has received a $200,000 scholarship that will pay for his tuition. Really a full ride for him over the next 4 years, so congratulations to Rigoberto, end quote, Murray said. The final bond committee is scheduled for 6 p.m. December 16th at George H.W. Bush New Tech Odessa. Quote, we had two different opportunities for members of the bond advisory committee to come in and explore all the data. There's a plethora of data, everything from survey data to facility review study. They looked at every building within ECISD, voter trend data, end quote, and a demographic study. Murray said there was a lot of information for committee members to go through, and they had a chance to ask questions. Quick hits. Empty stocking nears deadline. The Empty Stocking Fund needs your help to reach this year's goal of $100,000 with only 7 days left to give. A generous matching challenge from the Sewell family of companies has been offered to match donations up to $50,000. Funds stay in Ector County and help needy families like that of Tricia, not her real name, a divorced grandmother raising 5 grandchildren after the death of her daughter. Tricia cannot provide gifts for Christmas this year. This family can be helped through the Empty Stocking Fund, an annual fundraising effort by the Odessa American and the Salvation Army. Empty stocking funds go for a good holiday meal and small gifts under the tree. Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, or the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800. Zip codes for both are 79761. Call the Salvation Army at 332-0738. The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. Donate online at https://give.salvationarmytexas.org/give/371871/#!/donation/checkout. COVID-19 by the numbers. Ector County. 26,823 total cases, 556 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 13 students, 0 staff. Midland County, 29,781 total cases, 390 deaths. Texas, 4,361,295 total cases, 74,278 deaths. U.S. cases, 49,458,520 total confirmed, and 790,766 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. From staff reports. Local news roundup. Stepfather charged with injury to 10-month-old girl. An Ector County Sheriff's Office press release on Wednesday detailed a 28-year-old man was arrested in connection to injuries of a 10-month-old girl. Edward Lira, 28, was charged with injury to a child causing serious bodily injury, a first-degree felony. ECSO received a call from Medical Center Hospital at 6:28 a.m., December 2nd, in reference to a 10-month-old girl in critical condition from injuries she sustained, the press release stated. Odessa EMS transported the girl from the 11000 block of West Kastner Drive after reports of an unresponsive child. At the time, the child, along with another 2-year-old girl, were in custody of the stepfather. The 10-month-old girl was unconscious and in the process of being airlifted to University Medical Center in Lubbock with life-threatening injuries, which medical personnel advised indicated possible abuse, the press release stated. ECSO initiated a criminal investigation. During the investigation, the stepfather of the injured child was identified as Lyra. It was determined during the interview that Lyra was the only person in care and custody of both children and responsible for the injuries the child had sustained. Lyra was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 3rd. Jail records show. He had one bond totaling $50,000, and he posted bail on December 6th. 2-month-old injured, arrests made. A teenager and the mother of his child, who is a juvenile, were arrested after they were accused of injuring their 2-month-old infant. Lucas Coral, 17, and the mother of the child were charged with injury to child causing serious bodily injury, family violence, a first-degree felony. The Ector County Sheriff's Office press release detailed on December 6th that deputies responded to Medical Center Hospital in regard to a 2-month-old infant with serious bodily injuries. During the investigation, it was found the parents of the infant child, Coral and mother, juvenile, caused the injuries. Coral was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on December 6th, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $50,000 and was still in custody as of Thursday afternoon. Ector County Youth Center Director Kevin Mann told the Odessa American on Thursday afternoon the mother of the child was no longer in custody. Empty stocking. In memory of Bob Cook, $100 in memory of David Griffin, $250 Anonymous, $10,000 PNLC, $125 Judith Hayes, $100 in memory of Freddie Gardner, $100 total, today's total, $10,675, previous total, $20,252.68. Grand total, $31,360.48. Goal, $100,000. Want to help? Donations to the Empty Stocking Fund may be mailed or delivered to the Odessa American, 700 North Grant, Suite 800, Odessa, or the Salvation Army Community Center, 810 East 11th Street, 79761. Donate online at https://give.salvationarmytexas.org/give/371871/#!/donation/checkout. Want to know more? Call 332-0738. What is it? The Empty Stocking Fund was created by the Odessa American in 1995 and has raised more than $2.1 million. Empty Stocking Funds enable the Salvation Army to provide toys and food baskets to needy families in Odessa. This year's goal is $100,000. MC inducts 14 students into Communications Honor Society. Midland College inducted 14 students into the Beta Theta chapter of Sigma Chi Eta Communications Honor Society on November 30th. The ceremony was held in the Allison Fine Arts Building, Wagner and Brown Auditorium, on the main MC campus. Quote, being inducted into any honor society is no small accomplishment, end quote, Damon Kennedy, MC Vice President of Instructional Services, noted during his address to students and their families at the ceremony. Quote, these students are to be commended on their dedication and commitment to striving for success, end quote. The inductees are Precious Bamadil, Reagan Brookings, Madison Curry, Chapter Historian, Angelica Flores, Maria Gonzalez, Chapter Secretary, Kung Lian, Chapter Treasurer, Clayton McLean, Abdullahi Oyenihi, Chapter Vice President, Janelle Polaris, Megan Runyon, Jenny Schechter, Chapter Historian, Sui Tial, Chapter President, Ashanti Torres, and Janine Woolsey. To be eligible for membership in Sigma Chi Eta Honor Society, students must have a 3.25 GPA in a speech or communications class and an overall 3.0 cumulative GPA. They must also demonstrate commitment to their community and serving others. MC speech and communication faculty members are Melissa Boyce, Betty Clements, Program Chair, Stephen Gaines, Debbie Hightower, and Amy Post McCorkle. The department is administered by William Feeler, MC Dean of Fine Arts and Communications. Sigma Chi Eta is the official community college honor society of the National Communication Association, NCA. Since 2000, the Honor Society has fostered growth in the communication discipline among two-year colleges and universities. Every year, Sigma Chi Eta inducts and rewards new outstanding communication students while exploring options for community college students to transfer to four-year colleges or universities or enter the workforce. The MC Beta Theta chapter is the only community college Sigma Chi Eta chapter in the state of Texas. Death Notices. Nicholas Rodriguez, Jr. Midland. Nicholas Rodriguez, Jr., 76, of Midland, died Friday, December 3rd, 2021, in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. December 10th, 2021, at American Heritage Cemetery. Interment following graveside service at American Heritage. Cemetery arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. James Edward Jerkins, Odessa. James Edward Jerkins, 74, died Monday, December 6, 2021, in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Shantix, second time around. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 68-year-old female smoker in good health aside from having osteoporosis. I am addicted to smoking and have tried everything available to quit without any success. I tried taking Shantix 15 years ago and became suicidal. At that time, my late husband and I decided we would quit together using Shantix. He became very hostile and nasty, which resulted in me becoming depressed and suicidal. I did not act on my thoughts. We immediately stopped taking the medication, and life went back to normal for both of us. I want to know your thoughts on trying Shantix again. I have asked my doctors for advice and have received conflicting answers. Aside from the incident 15 years ago, I have no history of depression. I am a happy-go-lucky type of person in a great marriage. I could not find any research that addressed this situation. I know that Shantix can lead to suicidal thoughts, but I am hoping that may not happen the second time with me, given that my current spouse is very supportive. What are your thoughts? Answer. For almost all smokers, quitting smoking is the single most important thing to do for one's health. On average, smoking cuts 8 to 12 years off a person's life, and quitting smoking always leads to getting some of that time back. And the sooner the better, as the body has suffered much of the damage. In any event, the ongoing damage from smoking stops as soon as a person quits. There are many aids to help people quit. Before considering other treatments, it's worthwhile to consider why you are addicted to smoking and what other activities would be better to address any psychological issues that might be present. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Love interest raises eyebrow at man's shifts in behavior. Dear Abby, for Friday, December 10th. Dear Abby, a few months ago, I started dating a widower. He is a really great guy, and he seems perfect for me. I'm divorced, and my adult children live in other states. We have many shared interests and have a lot of fun together. I noticed early on that he is very emotional, but occasionally, he seems to have manic episodes where he works himself nearly to death, doesn't eat or sleep much, and then abruptly leaves. When we talk afterward, he picks on me for really trivial or untrue things. I know bipolar disorder isn't simple to diagnose, and I don't think this issue has ever come up with him. I just wonder if this relationship has a chance. His first marriage ended in divorce, and his children want nothing to do with him. Evidently, his second marriage was good, but she died last year. His youngest son is in college. My self-esteem isn't tied to this. I enjoy his company 95% of the time, and I think I love him. I don't plan to ever remarry, and neither does he. I don't think he is dangerous, but I am a no-drama type. So I'm wondering if I should let him go, even though it would be hard to do. Seeing Signs in Michigan. Dear Seeing Signs, if what you have written is accurate, you have seen this man only during his highs, but not during his lows. Because bipolar illness can be treated if the person is willing to admit they may have a problem, it would be wise to discuss this with him when he's in a normal phase and suggest that he be screened. If he refuses, then might be the time to rationally, rather than emotionally, decide whether to let him go. Dear Abby, I have two beautiful daughters from a previous marriage. My ex and I get along well, better as friends than partners, and do things as often as possible with the girls, which includes travel. We usually take 1 to 2 trips a year. The girls love it, and so do we. I am now remarried. My wife has a hard time with the traveling, and we have had many fights about it. She would like both families to travel together, but my girls don't want that. My ex's mom has just booked a trip to Hawaii and is willing to pay for me to go. My wife said absolutely not because Hawaii is such a paradise. I'm torn because these trips are the only real quality time I have with the girls. There is absolutely nothing going on between my ex and me. The girls would rather travel with their mom than anyone else. What should I do? Packed and ready. Dear Packed, how long have you been remarried? And how old are your girls? Although they may enjoy the fantasy of their parents being a happy family, that is all it is, a fantasy. It's wonderful that you and your ex-wife enjoy such an amicable relationship, but the time has come for you to stand up for the woman to whom you are presently married. She should have been welcomed on those trips right after the two of you made it official, and you should have made that clear. I don't blame your wife for being upset at this point. I would be too. You should encourage your wife to come too and devote some time to being with her.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.